morning. My name is Michael McCusker. My longtime friend, whom I have not seen in a long time, Michael Graham of Arch Cape, has recently died. He was, among many other attributes, a very good satirist and wrote a few scathers for my now defunct newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle, in the earlier years of my revival of it from a 3-year crypt. I not only dedicate today's program to his memory, I fill it with his satirical musings, beginning with his alternate reality to the 1980 eruption of Mount St. Helens in the spring of 1980. Remembering the Great Onion Peak Eruption by M.L. Graham. The unexpected eruption of historically dormant Onion Peak on the Oregon coast near Arch Cape is still talked about several years later. For those who lived through it, not only was the eruption catastrophic, it was also baffling. Onion Peak is not hollow like a normal volcano. Geologists are still unable to explain why it erupted. Onion Peak erupted in a superating blast of blue gas and steam that sent kitchen-like odors into the atmosphere. No one was injured, although most everyone in the area later reported stinging tears in their eyes immediately after the blast. Residents who were outside complained of being hit by moist, stringy debris that resembled sauerkraut. Emergency crews were sent into the area, and the mountain was put under martial law. Evacuation of residents to the old lighthouse at Tillamook Rock, which is currently a columbarium for wealthy ashes, was attempted in a fleet of surplus rubber dinghies. Most refused to flee. "This is my home," one said in tears. "I can't leave it like this." He pointed to a house that was almost buried under the stringy sauerkraut substance. A creamy lava, which had the color and consistency of Roquefort, dripped from the roof. The closest person to Onion Peak when it erupted was the botanist Gunther Leek, who became famous as the man who raced a volcano. He was camped at the mountain's base and reported that it emitted a rotting vegetable odor just before it blew. He has provided the following account of his race with death for this anniversary commemoration of what has become known as the Great Onion Peak Eruption. "I was camped at the base of Onion Peak to study the effects of the cucumber beetle, as on tansy ragwort. I heard a deep rumble that sounded like the growl of an upset stomach. It was followed by a jolting earth tremor. Then there was a flash and a blast, a blue gas and steam that blinded me with tears and sent me reeling. A powerful stench that I thought smelled like my wife's compost heap made it almost impossible to breathe. I was thrown about by another series of tremors, which were followed by a deafening sound that I swear was a cosmic belch. I abandoned my camp in an instant and fled down a logging trail. I could hear more loud belches behind me. I looked back and saw an ooze pour out of the steaming peak and down the slopes toward me. I started running again as the creamy lava buried most of the mountain's flowers and trees. I felt that I was being chased by a salad dressing. After a while, I got winded and ducked behind an old cedar tree and looked up at the mountain. It was peeling away in front of my eyes. Most of the top lay in the valley in large round slices. Great hissing geysers erupted all around me, and soon the air was spicy with garlic and vinegar smells. I began to run again, barely ahead of the lava that covered the forest as if it were a huge salad. When I finally reached the nearby community of Arch Cape, emergency operations were already underway. I noticed that everybody was crying. A fleet of traffic watch helicopters brought in an army of reporters and photographers who interviewed the weeping populace. One of the helicopters gave me a last look at Onion Peak. Its once majestic bulb had peeled away and left a raw suppuration in its place. The lava had flowed into Liver Lake and thickened it to the consistency of pan gravy. And that was a quote. Later, it was thought that damage might have been minimized if aerial tankers had been used to drop baking soda on the erupting mountain. A vacationing chef was heard to say that the volcanic ash tasted rather like an exquisite corps bouillon électrique, quote unquote. Onion Peak has remained quiet for the past 5 years, and geologists suspect that the eruption was one of nature's rare and inexplicable phenomena. The timber industry has attempted to spray the area with disinfectants, but a group that calls itself 165 Friends of the Scallion, quote unquote, has stymied its plans with court suits. The group would like to make Onion Peak a national historical site. Since the eruption, residents say that sometimes when the wind tilts from the east and blows off Onion Peak, they can smell something spoiling. And now, again by Michael Graham, Disillusion, which he also wrote for the North Coast Times Eagle. The park was being torn down, nothing but an enclave of filth, one city councilman had called it. Paths strewn with empty wine bottles and lost souls, another said. A conditional use permit for a high-rise condominium had passed 4-1. Like a hungry animal, a D8 bulldozer was devouring the landscape of Pioneer Park. Deet, 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 it howled, a backup warning system having been activated when the massive machine was shifted into reverse. After repositioning the cat, the operator pushed the gear forward, and the roaring cat took another run at a veteran box elder tree, this time succeeding in bowling it over. The tree landed heavily, its dark, healthy leaves quivering violently, then becoming deathly still. With a deep growl, the D8 moved the tree as if it were an insignificant twig, pushing it to the other corner of the park. Lying in a fetal position on a bed of street gravel under the nearby South 4th Street viaduct, Gossiut Thundercloud dreamt he was a coyote. Fulfilling an ancient legend, the coyote removed his left eye from its socket and threw it up into a tree where it dangled on a branch. Then, taking his right eye out, the coyote threw it also into the tree. How stupid, the coyote, Gossiut thought, for now he could not see. Sacrificing his windows of the world, the foolish animal was at once vulnerable to his surroundings. What a stupid fellow, the coyote. Unfolding himself with the twisting gestures Gossiut awakened. Faintly cognizant of the dream, the urban Indian, short and bulky and sloppily dressed, looked at a wine bottle that lay an arm's distance away. It was empty. He sat up unsteadily, studying the viaduct supports which reached the concrete trees to the steel girders above. He listened as cars and trucks passed with monotonous regularity above. Gaining his feet on the second attempt to stand, the groggy man studied his alternatives. Dead ahead of him was the park and the D8. Like an ominous beast, it was reshaping the earth. To his left, a short distance away, a group of park people huddled, watching the noisy, foul-smelling machine. To his right, a police black and white unit was approaching, making its usual patrol of the hobo park. The car stopped. "Move it along," the young, cocky cop said, secure inside his shotgun-lined door. "Move it along." Joining the circle of vaguely familiar faces, Gossiut stood in his usual taciturn manner. He listened as one of the men, old beyond his years, masked behind a grisly beard which concealed a long, thin scar, babbled something incomprehensible. The man's bottom eyelids, red and droopy, supported glassy eyes that mirrored subjugation. He smoked a loosely rolled cigarette, a habit that had discolored the beard below his lips. His lips were wino lips, watery and slightly parted, and when he talked, the crippled movement of his jaw suggested also an impairment of the mind. A woman in the gathering smiled dementedly at the old man's babbling. She had many missing teeth and was dressed in layers of gaudy colored clothing, which stank of spoiled fruit and stale tobacco. She was sexless among the group and a replica of the desperation they all shared in common. Her voice was jagged and caterwauled like a homeless alley cat, and when she finished her statement, most shook their heads, paying little attention to what she had said. Another man, standing in the circle of winos, was also talking. His voice had protesting tones that went with his distant eyes. He was openly hostile at the park's transformation, but he failed to work the others up. They knew the futility of it all, for futility ran in their veins. The park people would simply move on, just as the city council had hoped. Gossiut was beginning to feel the effects of cheap drink and non-existent nutrition. His perceptions were altering, a result of delirium tremens. Looking into the park, he saw what appeared to be a transparent slime-like substance oozing from the trees. He looked at the D8 caterpillar. It too was wallowing in transparent slime. His ears picked up on the shrilling sounds the machine was making. They sounded like scavenging crows. Gossiut looked away from the park. Then one of the park people produced a long and slender sack with a bottle tucked inside. The group dynamics changed. The old man with nicotine beard grunted, mumbled, and smiled. The hag licked her lips. The man with the bellicose talk became silent. Gossiut felt his head grow hot at the temples as a rush of adrenaline engorged his brain vessels. The sack was passed around. Each person made the bottle gurgle, then brought it down from his face and quickly passed it on. A subtle euphoria settled upon the group. The man on the D8 caterpillar stopped his destruction and produced coffee and cupcakes from his lunch pail. Tranquility returned to Pioneer Park. The bottle gone, the group dispersed. There was no longer a need for association. Gosiut went back under the viaduct and squatted next to a cement pillar. He watched as the man made the D8 came back to life and the monstrous machine resumed its feeding. A towering elm tree was toppled as another rush of DTs affected the Indian. The machine dragged the tree off, leaving in its place a pit of snake-like root runners. The D8 returned and bit at the snakes. They were brittle and snapped. The hallucinating Indian looked closer at the man operating the cat. He had the face of the wolf. Realizing his coyote nature, Gosiut felt threatened. Like the dream that he tried to forget, he was coyote, stupid coyote, and he watched with a leery eye as the wolf made the machine cat eat more trees. Again, a slow-moving squad car approached this disoriented Indian. Another policeman, his face also featuring wolf images, spoke to the stuporous man. But Gosiut, the coyote, could not comprehend wolf talk. Gosiut pleaded to himself for the menacing animal to move on, but it did not. Then the door of the car opened and the wolf emerged, doubled in size. Completely bewildered, Gosiut rose and turned to flee, running squarely into the cement pillar. Hey, wait a minute, the policeman hollered. Gosiut recoiled and lumbered off, wolf-like, into what remained of Pioneer Park. Wait a minute, I just wanted to talk to you about the Guadalupe mission, the cop said, laughing out loud at the paranoid man who was dashing into the D8's direction. He could hear the wolf laughing. Coyote stupid, coyote coward, Gosiut thought. Wolf laughed like all the rest when the coyote throw eyes into trees. The D8 backed up to get another run at a box elder tree. As it did, its backup warning system radiated more hideous sounds. Deet, deet, deet. They echoed portentously through the park. Gosiut fled the sound, leaping mounds of wrinkled turf and a crumbled statue. The police officer climbed back into his car, shaking his head. He welcomed the new condominium with its more stable population. Gosiut reached the far side of the park where the D8 was barely audible. He sat down, resting against a sturdy elm tree. He had shed the coyote image. The delusions had returned to the inner reaches of his mind until such chemical forces might cause them to surface once again. He looked around. Less than half the park still stood. In a nearby grove of trees, another group of park people huddled in a familiar manner, sharing a familiar commodity. Placing his weary head upon his knees, the Indian closed his eyes. He would need rest before the wolves returned. By afternoon, the D8 had eaten its way to the other side of the park where Gosiut slept against the tree. The spot in which he sat had made it impossible for the cat operator to see him. And why hadn't the tremendous noise awakened him anyway? That question would later be asked, but there would be no investigation of the incident, for the construction outfit had friends in high places. A wino, that's all it had been, a wino. The huge bucket of the D8 bit into the elm tree 6 feet up from the base. A surge of diesel exhaust vented from the stack as metal tracks cut deeply into the sod. The tree toppled halfway over. The operator put the giant machine into reverse. Deet, 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 and it backed up for another run at the tree. But something was amiss. There appeared to be denim-like material in the network of root runners, which twisted at the base of the tree. A sickening feeling collected in the operator's stomach as his mind played out the possibilities. He leaped to the steel track, then onto the ground. My God, it was a body. He stooped warily and touched it. A paramedic ambulance and the police unit, their overhead lights flashing like flame, encircled the scene. Small groups of bystanders clustered, each curious to see just what had happened. If only I saw the guy, the CAT operator said anxiously as he leaned against his silent machine. Another small group of park people who had been observing from the distance moved closer. I think it's him, one of the group said. Why the gold darn fool, an old man with brown stains on his beard exhorted. He must have fallen asleep next to the tree and was crushed. Gold darn fool. Hey, Al, the man dressed in suntan khakis called as he raced to the D8 operator's side, and in a much lower voice said, they tell me over there that they think he was already dead. That'll get us off the hook. Looks like he was just a wino. The police helped place the gurney inside the ambulance. Then the vehicle drove methodically from the park. Geez, boss, I didn't even see him till the damn tree was over, the operator lamented. It's all right, Al. Had to have been dead long before you ever got over to him, or he'd have sure as hell moved out of here. The operator nodded affirmatively, satisfied with the reasoning. Good. Now I got to get going. Got a meeting with them engineers. Just put it out of your mind. It was just that poor dude's time, that's all. A small group of park people hung on, another bottle having been produced. Anybody know who he was? A shapeless woman dressed in layers of gaudy clothing asked. Nah, I seen him around, but he's always never said nothing, an old man said, after making the wine bottle gurgle. Sure must have got all busted up by that there machine, another man said, yielding a nervous laugh. Ooh-wee. The group of park people turned and slowly walked away. The D8 expelled a large plume of blue-gray exhaust and resumed the destruction of Pioneer Park. This is Mike McCusker. Jack Harris is engineer of today's program. I close today's program with some teabag graffiti, which I also call Dasonic Parables. Unity is the way of grace in harmony. Be kind to yourself. Never regret your mistakes. Admire the courage it took to attempt the unknown. Uncage your heart, free your heart, let it be wild. Many paths lead to the same destination. It doesn't matter how you get there. Know the unknown, hear the unheard, see the unseen. Forgiveness is an act of consciousness. Let the opportunities come to you. Love is the ultimate law of life. Give to others and give to yourself the same attention. Love is the highest of all virtues. The unknown is where all outcomers are possible. Enter it with grace. Without gratitude, there is no prosperity. Breathe in peace. Breathe out blessings to all. Appreciate yourself and honor your soul. Uncage your heart, free your heart, let it be wild.